you could to know that it's National Shrimp Day tomorrow. Who knew? National Shrimp Day? Really? Well, you should celebrate, because there are all kinds of things to celebrate about shrimp. You know, it's 25% of all the seafood that we eat here in America, heading up toward 30% of all the seafood that we eat here in America. And shrimp has got a lot to offer you. And we're going to talk a good bit about this crustacean this morning. You know, everybody calls it a shellfish, but that's not really true. Oysters and clams and mussels and scallops, those are shellfish. They're bivalves. They've got a hard shell on the outside. But things that have a skeleton on the outside, like a shrimp, like a crab, like a lobster, they're crustaceans. That little thin shell is just nothing but their skeleton on the outside of their body instead of the inside of their body. In fact, that shell, from other species as well, is used to make the supplement glucosamine. Glucosamine is something that you've heard of that is beneficial for your joints. And so the nature of these crustacean shells, it's University of Milan that learned how to stabilize that magic molecule glucosamine so that we could use it to stop the deterioration of the cartilage in our joints. Glucosamine sulfate, that is, not glucosamine hydrochloride. The cheap version just does not do the job that glucosamine sulfate does. So for those of you that are looking to use those carapaces or those outer skeletons of these crustaceans, glucosamine sulfate is your best bet, up to 1,500 milligrams a day. That's what all the studies have been done on. And what we found out is that people that have joint pain, 4 months of taking 1,500 milligrams of glucosamine every day, 750 for breakfast, 750 for dinner, or 500, 500, 500, they will actually be able to build cartilaginous material in their knee. That's a place that most people complain about a lot of times because they've been carrying too much weight for too many years. But the nature of glucosamine sulfate is if you haven't gotten a big benefit from glucosamine sulfate in 4 months in your pain, then you're probably not going to get a whole lot more benefit from your pain. But again, University of Milan has done a good job with a 15-year study. Wow, 15-year study. We don't get funded for things like that very often. That really shows that use of glucosamine on a regular basis stops the breakdown of the joint. So supplementally, glucosamine is often used with a molecule called chondroitin. And I don't have as much positive things to say about chondroitin. I do use it, but not very much because it's a really big molecule and it doesn't get absorbed very well. But glucosamine sulfate, yeah, baby, I am a huge fan. So the next time you go to buy your bottle of glucosamine, make sure you look at the other name that goes with it and that it's not hydrochloride. Because some people say, oh, well, this is a $40 bottle and this is an $11.99 bottle. Well, that's the reason. It's a different source of glucosamine. So if you're at home and you buy your bottles of supplements, turn it around, look at the label, and it's going to tell you whether it's glucosamine sulfate or glucosamine hydrochloride, or it might say glucosamine HCl, which of course stands for hydrochloride. So that's enough about the skeleton of the shrimp. What's beneficial about shrimp and very many other seafoods, including things like salmon, is the nutrient astaxanthin. Got kind of a rhythm to that name, doesn't it? Astaxanthin. It's that reddish pink pigment that we know is a carotenoid. Well, when I say carotenoid, right away, some of you think beta carotene, and you know that that's the orangey pigment that's in carrots and papayas and peaches and butternut squash and all sorts of other orange and gold vegetables. But there's really 50 or more carotenoids that we eat on a regular basis. They're pigments. And yes, they were named after carrots originally. That was the first one that was found, was beta carotene. But there's lots of other carotenoids. We've talked about them here on No Nonsense Nutrition. Lycopene and lutein and alpha carotene. But astaxanthin is the one that we want to pay attention to. because it is both an antioxidant and an anti-inflammatory. Astaxanthin is really a nifty molecule. It's exactly the same width as the cell wall. Cell walls. Okay, let's back up. Picture every cell to look a lot like an egg, with the shell, with the white, with the yolk. We're going to call the yolk the nucleus and the white the cytoplasm and the shell the cell wall, but actually it's the part that's right underneath the shell. You know, when you hard boil an egg, there's that little scrawny thin membrane that's right underneath the shell, right on the very top of the white. And that's the cell wall. But of course, the only way that you're going to see that is when you hard boil the egg. But if you could imagine, and you can only do this in your imagination, that you were able to peel an egg without breaking that little thin membrane that surrounds the whole egg, that you could keep a liquid egg in your hand inside that sac. Well, that sac is a fat bag. So just like a latex water balloon would have that latex being the surrounding bag, I guess that's the best word, for the water that's inside the balloon, that membrane is the bag that holds the cell together. And that membrane is 100% made out of fat. And hopefully it's the good fats, because that membrane has to be permeable enough to let your nutrients and oxygen into the cell and permeable enough to let the waste products and the carbon dioxide get out of the cell. And so if that membrane was too weak, the cell would implode. If the contents filled the cell too much, the cell would explode. So there's a pressure gradient that happens inside and outside the cell, where we push against the wall of the cell from the inside and we push against the wall of the cell from the outside. It's a very hip situation. And a lot of cells, you know, cells may live up to about 4 months. You've got some cells that only live a couple of days, like the lining of your mouth, your pancreas. They turn over really quickly. But a lot of the cells in your body live about 4 months. But that cell wall may only be there for about 6 weeks. Cell by cell, all the way around that cell wall, molecule by molecule, that fat is replaced because it wears out. It gets thin in some spots, just like the elbow of your jacket gets thin when it wears against the arms of the chair. So the fats that are floating around in your bloodstream are the ones that the body can use to make that cell wall. So if you're eating good fats, you're having avocados, you're eating almonds, you're eating eggs, you're eating salmon, then those are good fats that are going to make up the cell wall, and the cell wall is going to be properly permeable. But if you're eating funky fats, if you're eating fried food and hydrogenated oils and a lot of saturated fat, then that cell wall is going to be too thick, too hard, too rigid, too dense. I don't think any of those words are exactly accurate, but they help you get the point. Well, the cool thing about astaxanthin is that astaxanthin is exactly the same width as that cell wall, and so it can bury itself in between those molecules of fat and act as an antioxidant, and as a result, act as an anti-inflammatory. We got a couple of milligrams of astaxanthin. That doesn't sound like much, but it really counts. That pigment, that reddish pigment, is what makes shrimp pink. And not all shrimp are pink. There's actually blue shrimp and green shrimp and white shrimp and a whole bunch of other colors. You know, there's actually thousands of species of shrimp. But the nature of that astaxanthin is the reason that when we cook lobster, it's going to turn pinkish. When we cook the crab, it's going to have that pinkish cast. Why the salmon has the pink in it. And it's also why flamingos are pink. Flamingos eat little tiny crustaceans that are buried down into the mud flats. Because when flamingos are born, they're white. And as they eat these foods, gradually that pigment starts to color flamingos pink. I was hoping if I ate enough astaxanthin, I would turn pink, but it hasn't happened yet. Well, we know that the astaxanthin provides antioxidant support both to the nervous system and to the musculoskeletal system. In fact, some animal studies have shown a decreased risk of colon cancer associated with astaxanthin intake, as well as a decrease in certain other kinds of problems that have to do with inflammation. But the astaxanthin content of shrimp or other seafood can really vary tremendously depending on how much of it is in their diet. And so this is the reason that farm-raised shrimp, which we're going to talk a good bit about, that are sometimes fed synthetic astaxanthin, funky stuff, that definitely creates a controversy because these are products that are made from petroleum. And needless to say, we don't really want them in our body. But when the shrimp eat the phytoplankton and the various kinds of algae that are out there, they gather up this astaxanthin, and that's what gives them that kind of pink glow. We also find it in krill. You know, krill is a little tiny crustacean and one that we're really getting a way better understanding of. I mean, even whales that can weigh 40 tons and 70 tons can live on little teeny tiny krill. And so when you buy your bottle of krill, well, first off, you want to make sure that it's been certified by ICOS, the International Krill Oil Standards Investigating Group. They check the krill and fish oils, the IFAS certification. They check those oils to make sure there's no heavy metals and no PCBs and no dioxin. And beginning about a year ago, they started actually testing for radiation as a result of the hideous Fukushima disaster, so that we make sure that if we're taking a pill that has krill in it, a capsule, I should say, properly, or fish oil, that we don't have any of those nasty toxins in there. But we're not going to find astaxanthin in the fish oil supplements, but we are going to find it in the krill supplements. I don't know of any shrimp supplements out there, frankly. But that astaxanthin is a natural part of the krill, and so we're getting two bangs for our buck. We're getting the omega-3s, which we're going to find in shrimp, but we're also going to get this wonderful molecule astaxanthin. We get lots of other stuff from shrimp. One of the things that we get is selenium, and I've talked about Brazil nuts containing selenium and said a Brazil nut a day helps keep the skin cancer away. The selenium that's contained in a shrimp is really well absorbed by the human body. And a deficiency of selenium is not only shown as a risk factor for cancers, it's a risk factor for heart failure and other cardiovascular disease. We know that low selenium can compromise cognitive function, that it can be related to depression. So there's lots of reasons for us to have selenium. But I don't want you eating a bag of Brazil nuts just to get your selenium up, because too much selenium, well, that can be toxic. So, you know, we're always waddling between these two places. We want about 400 micrograms a day. Shrimp is one of the ways that we can get it. You know, we eat a handful of shrimp, we're going to get 50 micrograms of selenium, and that's going to be incredibly beneficial for you. You know, we don't hear enough about these trace minerals. I had an interesting conversation with a client this week about trace minerals. She was given some drops that were called trace minerals, and they come from mining. And you might say, mining? Yeah, where Utah is, a million years ago plus, I don't know the exact date, was an inland sea. And that inland sea, all the little creatures that live in that sea, when they died, they fell down and become part of the seafloor. And all the plants, when they died, the algae, the seaweeds, the seagrasses, they fell down through the depths and became the seafloor. And over millions of years of evolution, all of those minerals were in the seafloor, and they have great big caves where they take a bulldozer, and that bulldozer is literally the size of this studio, and go in there and scoop out this rock and use that to make what are known as colloidal mineral supplements. Only problem with that is there's also aluminum in there. But these trace minerals. Trace minerals are things that we need in micrograms instead of milligrams. You know, when we talk about well-known minerals like calcium and magnesium and potassium, we're talking about taking milligrams, not micrograms. Micrograms, trace amounts, little teeny tiny bits. So the second mineral that is often overlooked in shrimp and often overlooked in the diet is copper. Copper not only lets you have color in your hair, but it's the only one of the seafoods that has a really good rating of copper. It's kind of a standout. This copper-containing protein that exists in shrimp, because really minerals in their best form are always hooked to an amino acid. So the nature of having just a little dab of copper. Now, copper is hazardous for some people. They bioaccumulate it. We actually have supplements that don't contain copper for that reason. But for the majority of us, a little dab will do us. We need it. And shrimp is one of the places that we can get good sources of copper, of selenium, even of phosphorus. Pretty much all of the proteins are going to contain phosphorus. You know, there was a myth that was stated about shrimp for years that they were really high in cholesterol, but a number of years ago they discovered that when they were saying, oh, shrimp is really high in cholesterol, you shouldn't eat shrimp because it's really high in cholesterol, what's true is they were measuring a whole lot of sterols. Cholesterol. See, we don't hear that word divided. Cholesterol is just one of the sterols that can show up in food. There are other sterols as well. But we've learned that dietary cholesterol doesn't really have much of anything to do with the cholesterol that's floating around in your serum. In fact, if you eat high cholesterol foods, your liver actually makes less cholesterol. So that nonsense about don't eat eggs, don't eat shrimp because of the high cholesterol content, what we know is that the desirability of the fats in the shrimp far outweighs any hazard from this dietary intake of cholesterol. Now, you know I've talked about omega-3 fatty acids lots of times, EPA and DHA. And the cool thing about shrimp is it's about 50% EPA and about 50% DHA. These are the reasons that I ask people to take fish oil, these omega-3 fats. You know, there's a lot of vegetarians that think that walnuts and flax seeds, because they contain omega-3 fatty acids, are equivalent to fish oils and seafood oils, but it's just not true. The nature of EPA and DHA are not the things that are found in stuff like flax and walnuts. And the body has a very poor conversion rate to get from ALA, alpha-linoleic acid, down to EPA and DHA, eicosapentaenoic acid, and dicosahexaenoic acid. Well, but you knew that. The thing about shrimp is that they have this one-to-one ratio of omega-3s and omega-6s. And that's what we need to get back to. You know, humanity evolved along the coast. We evolved along the coast because it was an easy source of protein. You know, our ancestors way back when were a lot smarter than the Europeans that showed up on the shores of America a couple of hundred years ago. You know, Native Americans were thriving on the seafoods and Europeans died of protein starvation, even though there was a plethora of seafood there. But we know that when we get more omega-3s, that the cell wall is healthier. And the nature of these various sterols that are present in shrimp, the nature of these various fats that are present in shrimp, are also anti-inflammatory. And so they decrease LDL cholesterol. It's a huge health benefit, as confirmed by lots of different researchers. And so we're back to the fact that shrimp has got all kinds of good benefits, not only the carotenoid antioxidant support from the astaxanthin, not only the omega-3 and the selenium and the copper, but also the protein. You know, we've got a beautiful 25, 28 grams of protein in every 4-ounce serving of shrimp. So it's about the 7th or 8th best source of protein that shows up in terms of the flesh foods. You know, when protein is broken down during digestion, little pieces of protein, they're called peptides. Peptides are chains of amino acids. An amino think of an amino acid like a letter, and a protein like a paragraph, and a peptide like a sentence. So it's not as many amino acids as in a protein, but it's more than just an amino acid standing alone. And so these peptides, there's this real interesting peptide that has about 10, 20 amino acids in it that's been found to be present in shrimp proteins, and it stimulates the release of CCK. And CCK from our cells, this is an important nutrient. Cholecystokinin helps us to feel satisfied. It helps to regulate the appetite. And so when we trigger the release of cholecystokinin, or CCK, we get this feeling that helps us feel full. And so some people overeat because they don't ever feel full. These are people that should be eating shrimp. And if we've only got about 7 calories in a shrimp, and that's going to vary, of course. There are shrimp that are, you know, not as big as your fingernail, and there are shrimp that are 8 or 9 inches long. Yeah, really. But generally speaking, the shrimp that we're getting out today in the market, you're going to have 7 to 10 calories of shrimp. You're going to get really low calorie content for really high delivery of nutrients. When we look at these health benefits of shrimp, you'd think, well, there's only good news. But it was really interesting. The show on TV on Sunday night, last week tonight, I think it's called, the guy that used to be on the Jon Stewart show that has that did a piece last night on how you can pluck information out of studies to prove darn near anything. And that's really true. You know, you can manipulate a study, and, you know, one of the few things that are difficult to fund are the confirmation of one study by a second study. So, you know, a study can come out, and not only can the media really twist it around. I mean, if I've read one, I've read 100 articles about how chocolate is good for you without ever telling you this is not exactly a health food. But what was interesting to me was that when I went to look at safety of shrimp, what's going on in these fish farms? What's going on in these, you know, shrimp areas that I've heard so much about? What's true is there are some people that are just freaking hysterical. You know, they take every bad news piece of information that ever came out and warning, warning, warning. Well, what's true is we got to eat. And you always want to learn more about your food. You want to learn more about where it comes from. That's why you listen to No Nonsense Nutrition. That's why you go up on Podomatic and listen to the shows that you missed. That's why you go to the archives here at WSLR to listen to prior shows. Because you want to know more about your food and where it comes from and what's in it. But, you know, there's a point you can become a food neurotic. And what was interesting as I was doing some research yesterday was finding some sources where these people were food neurotics. I don't know what the heck these people are eating. Are they living on the top of the mountain and chanting 23 and a half hours a day? Living on sprouts? I don't know. But circumstances are, it's not that bad a news. Yes, you want to be careful. I don't eat shrimp from Thailand and Cambodia and Bangladesh. You know, those are the places that we found the dirty shrimp. Not only have they put nasty things into the shrimp as a result of, you know, they grow them in cages out in the ocean. And first off, they destroyed a bunch of mangroves in order to do so. And you know, mangroves protect the coast. And then they use tetracyclines and other antibiotics, not necessarily in the fish, but on the fish. Not necessarily in the shrimp, but on the shrimp. When they harvest these things out of these virtual cesspools of their own waste, the bacteria count is so high that they would break down quickly. I mean, shrimp shells break down quickly anyway. That's why we haven't been able to find them in ancient sites. But what's true is that when they shovel these various kinds of antibiotics on top of the shrimp, they're not even treating what causes early mortality syndrome in shrimp, which are viruses. It's the same thing we're doing to humans. Most devastating shrimp diseases are caused by viruses, and antibiotics don't even work against them. But Consumer Reports, which isn't always my favorite assay agency, but they do a darn good job in investigating some of the things that the FDA is assigned to do and some of the things that, you know, chemicals from cosmetics to household goods are supposed to be checked. Consumer Reports does a check. Well, they went to 27 different cities, and they bought 342 packages of frozen shrimp. 284 of them were raw and 58 of them were cooked, and they went to every kind of chain supermarket and big box store and natural food store. They didn't include fresh, never frozen shrimp because that's really only a small percentage of what we buy. What we mostly buy are frozen shrimp, whether they're raw or cooked. And they tested for bacteria. And the thing that showed up the most, Salmonella, Vibrio, Staphylococcus aureus, you know that causes MRSA, and E. coli. They looked for drug residues. What's true is Vibrio, a bacteria that we know causes sickness when people eat oysters, showed up in all too many of the raw imported farm shrimp. Antibiotics were detected. Even MRSA, methicillin-resistant Staphylococcus aureus, was found in 7 different raw shrimp samples out of 342. So yeah, the risk is there. But remember, when they tested chicken breasts, 97% of the samples contained bacteria. So it's not a situation where we're going to avoid some of these bacteria. That's one of the reasons we don't want to be taking PPIs, proton pump inhibitors. Those proton pump inhibitors, I just hate that commercial that's on television that shows this woman going down a buffet line, loading her plate with all this picnic food, and saying, all I have to do is to take this antacid product and I'll never get heartburn. Well, baby, the heartburn was telling you you shouldn't eat that crap. So when we use these proton pump inhibitors, especially, not just the H2 blockers, there's two categories of these antacid kinds of products. We reduce our stomach's ability to kill these bugs. You have to remember, hydrochloric acid in your stomach is not just there to digest food. Everybody guesses that. What's really true is it's just there to help break down protein. Your stomach acid won't break down a pear. It won't break down a piece of toast. It only works on the shrimp and the salmon and the chicken and the egg. But when you suppress that stomach acid as a result of taking these proton pump inhibitors, you lose the ability to sterilize your meal. And then it's a lot more likely that you're going to end up with food poisoning. But what's true is when Consumer Report tested these samples of raw shrimp that were purchased all around the country in all these different stores, what they found out was that the farm shrimp from Bangladesh, 83% of them were contaminated with bacteria. In India and Indonesia and Ecuador and Vietnam and Thailand and Argentina, all of these, more than 50% of them were contaminated with bacteria. The ones from the United States, 20%. That was in 55 samples that were tested. So that's a way better hit record than 83% from Bangladesh or 74% from India. But what we need to know is that these antibiotic-resistant bacteria, you know how it happens in humans. You take a little bit of antibiotic, it kills the weakest, it leaves the strongest behind. And so that's how we create these antibiotic-resistant bacteria. But the nasty ones, the MRSA, that was found only came from the farm shrimp in Vietnam and Bangladesh and Ecuador. And remember, unless our, you know, Congress decides to screw us again, you still have to have a license plate on every shrimp that's sold. You have to know where it came from. So you want to remember that the country of origin is going to be on there. You know, I want U.S. shrimp. But contaminated samples came out of Albertson and Costco and Sprouts Farmers Market and Walmart. You know, they came out of all kinds of stores. But what's true is that there were places that they could buy these things and they didn't have these contaminations. It was true that there are sustainable sources for these shrimp. There are sustainable sources that are doing a better job in terms of giving you a high-quality product. And, you know, we don't endorse here on non-commercial radio. You know, we're not in a position to tell people to go buy it here or go buy it there, but I have to report on the studies. And what the studies indicated were places like Whole Foods Market are doing a really good job in terms of making sure that what they're selling is not only sustainable, but bacteria and viral free. So Monterey Bay Aquarium has probably done the most practical recommendations of all of the fishes. National Ocean and Atmospheric Administration Fish Watch is another one. So there are two sites that you can go on. You can go on the Monterey Bay Aquarium, and on the Monterey Bay Aquarium, they will give you Seafood Watch. In fact, seafoodwatch.org is a wonderful website. Seafoodwatch.org will list the fishes that are safe to eat, not only from a bacterial standpoint, but also just in terms of sustainability. And they will tell you which ones you want to stay away from. The same thing is true on the National Ocean and Atmospheric Administration Fish Watch. Easy for me to say. Actually, it's fishwatch.gov. So two sites. Monterey Bay offers seafoodwatch.org, and National Ocean and Atmospheric Administration Fish Watch offers a site called fishwatch.gov. These have really educational, user-friendly profiles of over 100 fish and shellfish, and they give up-to-date information about their habitats and their population and their species science and their nutrient content and all sorts of things. Fish Watch is more educational in nature, whereas Monterey Bay Seafood Watch is simply giving you a list. And you can get a little wallet card that you can carry with you to the market to know which fishes to buy and which fishes to stay away from. And so we want sustainability. We want to make sure that the Pacific whitefish, the most widely farmed single species, you know, that those are the commercial fish and shrimp that we want to eat. Because this is the first year that over 50% of all the fishes that we eat, and I'm going to include shrimp in that list, are going to be farmed. And so we're going to continue to have more farmed fish, more farmed seafood across the board. I was really interested when we drove up north the last time when we were up in Chiefland, one of the places that my husband and I do astronomy, that they have aquaculture up there where they're actually growing oysters in pens. And they have to keep water circulating all the time. So it was actually raising these oysters in clean water, which is better than getting oysters out of a bay. But when we look at the fish that are coming from India and Bangladesh and Thailand and Indonesia and Vietnam and Malaysia and China and Ecuador and Peru and Venezuela and Argentina and Honduras and Panama and Nicaragua, you know, we're finding stuff that's way more likely to be contaminated. And when you're eating in a restaurant, you don't know. You don't know where they got their fish. You don't know where their shrimp came from. But make sure you get it hot. It was like when I went to Egypt. There were 18 of us on the tour when we went to Egypt. And the piece of advice that I got from somebody who is incredibly internationally well-traveled to third world countries said, don't eat anything that doesn't have steam coming off of it. Don't eat a salad. Don't eat a piece of fruit. Don't eat a tomato. Just make sure steam is coming off of it. And boy, I just saluted that piece of advice. And for all those weeks that I stayed in Egypt, I only ate things, and my roommate, the same way, she did the same thing. Only ate stuff that had steam coming off it. We ate out of street carts in Cairo. Neither one of us ever got sick. All the other 16 people on the trip got sick, because after 3 or 4 days, they got cocky, and they started, you know, eating other things that weren't peeled or boiled or steamed on a grill. So at least, you know, the bacteria is dead. Now, there are toxins that can come from some of the dead bacteria, but at least you're not going to get an active culture. But, you know, I know some people who say, well, I won't eat shrimp because shrimp are bottom feeders. Well, first off, they're not scuba divers. One of the things I learned very quickly when I first started to dive is that shrimp are free swimming. So, yes, they may free swim near the bottom of a body of water. It doesn't matter whether it's a lake, a river, or an aquarium. But what's true is these people that blather on about, I don't eat shrimp and crab and lobster because they're bottom feeders, are people who have no problem eating snapper and cod and grouper and haddock, not to mention halibut and flounder, which freaking lay on the bottom. You know, those are flat fish like sole. Those are bottom feeders. So, you know, when we talk about bottom feeders, those ones that graze along the bottom, whether they feed on plant material or they feed on other bottom feeders. So there are both carnivores and non-carnivores that are bottom feeders. Some bottom feeders are even capable of burying themselves, like sea cucumbers and bristleworms. But when we look at, you know, flat fish like halibut and flounder and sole, they're like stingrays. They may be able to bury themselves in the bottom. You know, this is a mechanism that's used to protect themselves. I saw a special on TV last night about Egypt, about the wild places of Egypt, and saw a skink, one of those little lizards, that dove into the sand and actually swam in the sand. Well, that's essentially what bottom feeders are doing. So the idea that shrimp are not good because they're bottom feeders, oh, freaking get real. You know, what's true is we all got to eat. So we know that contamination is rampant when it comes to these farm-raised shrimp. We know that there can be chemical residues from everything like cleaning agents to antibiotics. We know that the Food and Water Watch has told us that darn near 30% of all shipments of imported seafood get rejected due to filth. We know that some of these plants where they're paying people 8 cents and 30 cents an hour to work are doing some pretty disgusting looking things. So people say, well, we don't want Gulf shrimp because, you know, after 2010 when the Deepwater Horizon blew, you know, you couldn't do any shrimp fishing for a long time out of the Gulf because of the contamination of the oil. We had a friend whose buddy had a shrimping business down in the Keys, and he said every time he would dip his nets down, he would get tremendous amounts of electrical wiring from all of the places that had been destroyed, all the buildings that had been destroyed in New Orleans, and all that electrical wiring and the PCBs that it contains were coming up in the shrimp nets. Well, happily, the ocean dilutes a lot of that. So I'm not pretending it's pure water. There's no pure water left anywhere. The whole reason I won't eat shellfish, oysters, clams, mussels, and scallops is there's no clean water to get them out of. It isn't that they don't taste good. It's just that they're filter feeders, and so we don't have clean water to get them out of. So we know that the farm-raised shrimp and farm-raised fish can be icky. That's a scientific term, you understand. They may contain hazardous antibiotics, so wash them good. They may be tainted with something, but find me a food that isn't. You know, you can have your vegetables raised by monks and picked under the full moon and chanted over before you eat them and washed in the clear spring from the top of the mountain. But all both of you that are going to be able to do that are not going to be able to do anything to feed all the rest of us. We know that these non-native shrimp farms can contribute to climate change. Well, so does the car driving you to work today. But what's true is from a clean source, shrimp are an excellent food. You know, not only are we going to get that astaxanthin and the selenium and the copper and the good protein, we're going to get plenty of B12. We're going to get those healthful fats. We're going to get a good bit of tryptophan. That essential amino acid that we need in order to make serotonin, that magical nutrient that keeps us bright and perky. So when you go on the Monterey Bay Aquarium Seafood Watch, remember that's seafoodwatch.org, they have a best choice shrimp list. Any northern shrimp, anything that's caught in the U.S. or the Canadian Atlantic, the pink shrimp from Oregon, yum. The wild-caught rock shrimp from here in the United States. The prawns. And by the way, prawns are nothing but big shrimp. They're not really a different species. You know, there's actually thousands of species of shrimp. There's a few that we use the most. These white leg shrimp are the ones that are most often farm raised. You know, shrimp don't really move with their legs like crabs and lobsters do along the bottom. Their legs are mostly for perching. They've got these two little flaps underneath. They paddle through the water. Sometimes in California, you can get coon stripe shrimp. They're caught using submerged pots. And since I'm headed to San Diego this week to go to the Institute for Functional Medicine annual symposium, maybe I'll get myself some California coon stripe shrimp. Yeah, Institute for Functional Medicine. It's that time of the year. They do their big symposium every May, and they move it from city to city. Last year was in Austin. The year before was in San Francisco, so it always gives me a reason to go to the West. Institute for Functional Medicine, there'll be, I don't know, 1,200, 1,500 clinicians there, and it's almost all clinicians. There's very few support staff that come into this particular workshop. MDs and DOs, that's osteopaths, chiropractors and acupuncturists, pharmacists and nurses, nutritionists, dietitians. We all sit in the same room together. We all learn together. And they have a theme every year. And the theme this year is about both movement and rest and relaxation. So it's not necessarily talking directly about food, but talking about the other things that we need to develop health and to be easy. So I look forward to 3 days of the Institute for Functional Medicine beating me with hammers to jam all this stuff in my head. They actually start with breakfast meetings at 6:30 in the morning and do classes from 8 o'clock until 6 o'clock at night. It's pretty intensive. A lot of breakout classes that are going to give other insight. And a few of my buddies are going to be teaching in those breakout classes. So I'll look forward to sitting in the class of individuals that I know personally. I know about their practice. People like Dr. Richard Horowitz, one of the world experts on Lyme disease. So look forward to his class. And also look forward to seeing my colleagues, seeing the other people that have been pioneers in the arena of holistic medicine. And so I've told you before, if you're ever looking for a doc, go up on functionalmedicine.org. Functionalmedicine.org is the website of the Institute for Functional Medicine, and on there there's a link called Find a Practitioner. And when you go through that link, you can find people who are graduates of AFMCP, that's Applied Functional Medicine and Clinical Practice. And so the AFMCP graduates have sat through some grueling training. And that was the training that I took back, well, I guess 12 years ago now. And then you're going to find an even more elite group called the CPs, or the Certified Practitioners. So they are able to embrace the title IFMCP, Institute for Functional Medicine Certified Practitioner. And when you look on Sarasota, you're going to find my name on that list. I was one of the first group of 124 people in the world who were granted the CP status. It's a 4-year track to go further. So graduates of AFMCP have really stuck their toe in the water in terms of functional medicine, and people have gotten the CP designation have really, well, they dove in. They didn't just stick their toe in the water. So whether you're looking for somebody in Schenectady or looking for somebody in Kankakee or Portland or wherever, if you find the clinicians who have graduated from AFMCP or have earned the CP status on the functionalmedicine.org site, you're going to find somebody that's, well, I'd just say sharper than the average bear. So I will be out there along with my buddy Dr. Fred Harvey and many other clinicians that are interested in stretching our mind. Well, I was trying to stretch your mind today a little bit about this excellent food, shrimp. But when we think about that 8,000-mile trip to America's dinner plate, whether it comes from a shrimp pond in Asia or South America, take heed. See if maybe you can find some U.S. source shrimp, some Gulf shrimp. You know, what's in that pond is really the question. So, you know, we think the Food and Drug Administration is going to protect us, but what's true is less than 1% of all of the shipments are actually tested. For bacteria, the enforcement is practically non-existent. And this really has to do with our Congress funding. The FDA regularly inspects fewer than 2,000 of the hundreds of thousands of foreign facilities that export food to the U.S. every year. But it's going to take an aware Congress to realize that all these cases of food poisoning we see are often coming from this imported food. And food poisoning, you know, I've said this before on No Nonsense Nutrition. There's hardly a week that goes by that somebody doesn't come into the office and say, I had that 24-hour stomach flu. There is no such thing as a 24-hour stomach flu. Flus are all about your lungs, just like colds are all about your head. When we look at these episodes, the cramps and the bloat and the gas and the frequency to stool, otherwise known as diarrhea, you got food poisoning. You need to look in the rearview mirror and see what you ate. You know, where these processing plants are, where the shrimp are deheaded and shelled and deveined and packed into tiny little packages, this is where we find the bacterias that show up. And that's one of the reasons that I tell people that get cuts on their hand all the time, like I got on my finger this morning. If you're going to be handling meat, and I don't care whether it's a chicken breast or a shrimp, wash your hands. Wash your hands before, wash your hands after. You know, or wear gloves. MRSA's out there. It's increasing. You know, Sarasota Memorial Hospital dropped down a notch in terms of its quality rating this year because of infections. So we need to pay attention to the fact that when we're handling flesh foods, we need to be more vigilant. You know, I no longer take those turkey cutlets, that's what I made for dinner last night, and put it in the sink and rinse them off before I stick them in the oven. Because that splashing water can turn around and contaminate the salmonella. Well, you know, less than 50% of the turkey has salmonella on it. More like 90% of the chicken has salmonella on it. So why don't I get salmonella? Because my stomach is working good. That's right. But remember the complexities of the law. Remember that supermarkets are required to specify where the shrimp comes from. And be aware. Be aware. Be afraid. Be very afraid. Look out for the Bangladesh and Thailand and Vietnam and Cambodia shrimp. Because these are the ones where they found almost 30% of the uncooked shrimp testing positive for Vibrio. This is a potential pathogen. I would really stay away from the breaded and otherwise packaged shrimp. I'm a lot happier with just getting shrimp that are shrimp, but I'd be happy to just buy the shrimp that haven't been frozen and just defrosted, you know, if they're just laying out there. But really are fresh shrimp, and we're very fortunate here on the Gulf Coast that, you know, there's several places that we can do that. So I don't think there are reasons to never eat shrimp again. Yes, I'm careful. And yes, I think we could do a better job in terms of not doing things that are damaging to the planet. You know, when I tell people that we have to eat more beans in the diet because we have to have more days out of the week, more meals out of the week where we're not eating flesh foods, the planet can't support it. So no, I'm not a vegetarian or a vegan. You know, I got enough vegans that have a bullet for me out there. Because I still endorse flesh eating, but I don't endorse a lot of it. What I want us to understand is that human being evolved eating these protein foods. Anybody that says differently does not know their history. Those proteins are beneficial for us. They help us to repair our cells. They make our DNA. They make our enzymes and our neurotransmitters and our hormones. They definitely make us healthier, but we don't eat as much as we've been eating. Look at 14 lunches and dinners. What if four of those lunches and dinners were bean-based? You had a bean burger, a bowl of split pea soup, and a nice piece of cornbread and a salad, a bowl of chili. You had some tofu in a meal. And what if four of those 14 lunches and dinners were fishes in some form, maybe one of them being crustaceans? And what if four of them were birds, chickens and turkeys and ducks? And that only left two of them to be a four-legged animal, like beef and lamb and pork and buffalo. We make a big difference on the planet when we reduce the use of four-legged animals. We make a big difference in health as well. The planet cannot support that 30% growth that we expect in population over the next 50 years. We need to think every time we go to the market that every single thing we buy is a vote. Every dollar is a vote to tell the management of the market what it is that the American consumer is looking for. Look at the growth of organic foods. The growth of organic foods has come as a demand from the marketplace. And so cleaner food, better food, it takes your demand in order to do it. You know, you're listening to No Nonsense Nutrition. I'm Eve Prang-Plues. I'm a licensed nutrition counselor and an IFMCP, Institute for Functional Medicine Certified Practitioner. I've been in practice here in Sarasota for 28 years.